on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. The COVID pandemic has ravaged many of our nation's institutions, shifting and ending careers, altering the fabric of our daily lives. The arts in general were among the first of our foundational conventions to feel the impact. Today, in my concluding episode of The Future of the Arts in Our Region, I am honored to welcome my guest, Michael Greer. Michael is president and CEO of Arts Fund. As a former professional dancer and experienced executive, Michael's leadership experience spans both the for-profit and not-for-profit sectors. He's been executive director of Oregon Ballet Theater and Portland Ballet in Maine, coast to coast. Michael started his arts career as a dancer with Ballet West in Salt Lake City. He then spent a decade as an executive with multinational manufacturing, financial services, and commodities firms. He's a trustee of Downtown Seattle Association, Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce, and United Way of King County. Michael holds a BA in economics from Hampshire College, an MED from University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and an MBA from the Wharton School. Wow. Welcome, Michael. I think the show is over now. That took it all.
I got to meet this guy.
Yeah, really. Your resume is really impressive. And of course, a description of the perfect person to lead an organization like Arts Fund. And I have to mention, I'm from Chicago, so I'm really familiar with the University of Illinois.
How fantastic. Another Midwesterner. I'm from St. Louis originally.
Oh, I've lived in St. Louis, too. In fact, my children were born there.
Oh, great part of the world.
It is. So let's start with an explanation of the mission of Arts Fund.
Sure. Susan, the Arts Fund, our mission is to support the arts through leadership, advocacy, and grant making in order to build a healthy, equitable, and creative Washington. We have been around as an organization for over 51 years, and we were originally formed as Corporate Counsel for the Arts, and 100% of our support came from the corporate community. But over those 51 years, we have really expanded our reach into the community, and now our support comes from corporate, individual, and foundations. And I think it really reflects the desire of a lot of different stakeholders to support arts and culture throughout the greater Puget Sound and the entire state of Washington.
And you are focused on the entire state of Washington. You don't really do a national effort or conduct a national effort. Is that right?
That is correct. Although I've got to say that we are one of the larger United Arts Funds in the country. And so our things like our research and our advocacy is being paid attention to on a national level. And I think that it's important for regions like Washington and Seattle and the greater Puget Sound to be aware of the fact that people are paying attention to what's happening here and to try to support other regions that are also, advocating and trying to support their own arts and culture communities.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is about the recently released results of an extensive study that you did on the impact of COVID-19 on the arts. What were your most surprising findings from that study?
There were so many findings from this study. And, I think overall, the overreaching message that we took from the study was that Washington cultural institutions have been significantly impacted by this pandemic. And we also found that revitalizing those institutions is going to be a really integral part of our entire state pandemic recovery. One of the things that we found was that organizations lost nearly 21% of their revenue in the first year of the pandemic alone. And
Wow. That
is all over revenue. So when you look at the earned revenue, which are, that's revenue earned from performances, from ticket sales, that type of thing, it was over 50% the first year and over 60% additional reduction the next year. So there was just a complete decimation of the sector. In addition, the organizations that we spoke with, nearly 41% of those organizations said that they had to furlough staff, reduce hours or pay, and it was just a real intense impact to the cultural workforce as well. So there was there was a lot of, you know, the past 2 years have been very, very difficult for the sector, and that's almost an understatement.
Yeah, and I suspect there were fairly powerful tangential impacts too on places like restaurants and Airbnbs and the associated businesses that thrive on arts activities. Would that be correct?
That is a fantastic observation, Susan, and one that I'm really glad that you brought up, because one of our recommendations that came out of the study was to, you know, the real need to protect the cultural workforce. And when we talk about the cultural workforce, we're talking about artists and administrators, of course, but we're also talking about the stagehands, the builders, and all of those adjacent industries that you named, whether it's the restaurant or whether it's the cleaning crews and, you know, the building maintenance and other services that have large contracts with some of our arts and culture venues and organizations. So it really, the ripple effect is quite large throughout the community.
So what, if any, were you able to assess in terms of the overall impact of the basic shutdown of performing arts, at least live and performing arts?
Well, as we mentioned, the financial impact was significant and remains significant. As far as the, you know, I think an extrapolation on that, we talked a little bit about the damage to the cultural workforce, and there is also the threat of a cultural brain drain. When we talk about that 41% of organizations that had to furlough staff or reduce hours or pay, we know that a portion of those individuals and those jobs and those pays will not be coming back.
Right.
And so what do we do looking forward 3, 5, 10 years out? One of the other recommendations that we have from our survey is to pay attention to the long-term adaptation of the industry. One of the things that we're saying a lot is that, you know, COVID-19 kind of delivered our future to us overnight, but the industry has not been able to change overnight. And so we need to really be paying attention to what are those long-term implications and how can we, you know, raise funds and advocate on behalf of short, medium, and long-term solutions.
So what were some of those changes that arts organizations had to implement in order to survive, and which of those do you think might stick around for the long term?
That's a great question, and I wish I knew that answer 100%. As to, you know, which ones are going to stay for the future. But I will say that one of the changes that I was most impressed with and continue to be the most impressed with was organizations pivot to alternative delivery models. And yes, that includes digital, but it also includes outdoor events. It includes, you know, a number of different ways of taking that model that had been present, particularly within the performing arts industry for hundreds of years, and turning it around almost overnight. An analogy that I use a lot is the shift for platforms like Disney Plus or Netflix or Hulu that took over a decade and billions of dollars, really understanding the digital landscape and what consumers wanted and how best to deliver, you know, an in-person theater experience to someone at home. And, you know, they succeeded to a degree, but it's taken, you know, a lot of time, a lot of resources, and a lot of really smart people. To an extent, the arts and culture sector did that within weeks. Now, we have not been as successful yet, but I have been very impressed with the way that they continue to offer a lot of their programming to people in the community when they needed it the most, really at the, you know, at the drop of a hat. And it was very impressive to see. And we hope that a portion of that, those alternative delivery methods maintain, post-pandemic, because we saw that there were a number of different communities that found alternative delivery methods more accessible to them. And so we hope that we can continue to capture those audiences and those patrons so that they can continue to benefit from, you know, the benefits of arts and culture.
Did some of the organizations in the region add to their menu, if you will, more educational opportunities, more educational programs in order to keep their staff working?
That is not a data point that we collected, but I will say that it was, education and arts education is an aspect of the pandemic that was severely interrupted. We all know that anyone with, with small children or that are in that sector know that education was severely disrupted by the pandemic, and arts education was a part of that.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about ways that organizations pivoted in this process, what were some of the most interesting and creative moves that you observed or that you learned about in your study?
I think that it's hard to say the most, because I think what we saw was that each individual organization found its own way to pivot appropriately to its community. And I'm thinking of, organizations that primarily worked with youth or at-risk youth. A lot of them were really on the front lines delivering mobile hotspots or, communication devices, whether they're iPads or phones, to make sure that their youth could continue to access the programming as it moved digitally. And then I think of some of the larger organizations that, took their halls and turned them into giant recording studios and put out a really professional level product in a very short period of time. And they, were able to source the videographers and the sound engineers and negotiate with the unions and everything else to really make sure that their delivery was still available to the community. And so there was a number of different ways, and it was really particular to the organizations and who their communities were. But I think that the overarching takeaway was that people really understood from the beginning that they needed to reimagine the role of arts and culture in their community. And they did that in a way that allowed their patrons and new patrons to continue to benefit from their programming.
Yeah, I found a quote in your study that I thought was very interesting, because you are quoted as saying, "Arts and culture have been a substantial part of what is seeing our communities through the changes wrought by COVID. And, at the same time, these institutions were on the ropes. How have you seen the arts and cultures institutions address some of the negative impacts to the general community through the pandemic?
I can answer that by referencing a number that I found really impressive in this study. And that is that 50% of Washingtonians see cultural institutions as a key part of community recovery, and I want to be clear on that demographic. That is 50% of Washingtonians that we surveyed, and not just the arts and culture organizations or the workers. This was across the board, and so I think while there were negative community ramifications to the pandemic and maybe a drop in the types of delivery and the number of programmings that were out there, at least when we did our study, and which was really throughout kind of the height of the worst of the pandemic, Washingtonians still saw the arts and culture institutions in their community as part of what was going to get them through this. And, another great stat from the report is that 82% or more saw that they either felt that the arts and culture mattered as much or more to them than it did pre-pandemic. So yes, there was a negative aspect to the community in terms of jobs, in terms of kind of that connection to each other. But I think that there was also a recognition that arts and culture really played a role in the their like individual health and community health that was maybe not acknowledged as much prior to the pandemic.
That is fascinating. And that makes me think that folks embrace the idea of streaming theater. Maybe they could attend theatrical events digitally that they might not have been able to afford a ticket to in person before that. It's really interesting to me to hear you say that the community embraced the pivots and the creative delivery techniques that the arts organizations in the region took on. And it makes me think, King County is among the wealthiest counties in the U.S. What do you see government doing to support the recovery of the arts post-pandemic?
That is a great question. I will follow up on your previous comment, because I think it's a really important one to dig into, is mm-hmm. that I think that communities, while there is nothing that will replace in-person events. The model of arts and culture is bringing people together for a shared experience, and that yes. has continued over thousands of years, and it will continue for another thousand years, right? That is not going away. But what was impressive to me was the community's acknowledgement of, hey, this is important to us no matter how we get it. If we can't be in person, fine. We will find another way to bring arts and culture into our life because it is that important. And I think it speaks to the kind of the humanity of having art in our lives. So I just wanted to kind of put a period on that because I think it's a really important thing for us to recognize. As far as your question about public support, one of our recommendations is that we must sustain and expand the public support that we saw for the arts throughout the pandemic relief. These federal, state, and municipal programs that, you know, kind of stemmed off of PPP and CARES and a lot of those monies were key to the survival of the industry. They could provide dollars to the sector at scales that private or corporate philanthropy can just not, we can't begin to match. Mm-hmm. And so moving forward, kind of coupled with that idea that this is a long-term recovery, we need to make sure that these types of support programs are now geared towards a 3, 5, 10-year type of recovery. And we need to be advocating to our, you know, local elected officials and decision makers to let them know how appreciative we are of the public support that happened throughout the pandemic, but to also let them know that to rebuild this sector stronger and, you know, more resistant to future shocks, which we know there will be, we need to continue this type of support into the future.
What sort of programming along those lines are you proposing? What kind of shape is it going to take?
Say again, from the are you talking about from the our public sector, or are we talking about from the organization?
From public center. Well, both.
Oh, great. Okay, good. I'll try them both. But I think that there are a lot of possibilities for the public sector to support arts and culture. We have examples of things like cultural access. We have fantastic institutions in King County, like For Culture, and in Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, with a number of different programs that do a great job at supporting arts and culture in this community and beyond. And so I think without prescribing policy, on the fly, I think that it's important that our decision makers are paying attention to our local arts and cultural organizations and listening to them in terms of what they need in order to support future growth. I think one of the key stats that kind of came out of this report for us was the idea that, you know, with the level of contributed income that we saw throughout the pandemic, it kind of stayed about even and actually rose a little bit during fiscal year 20, but projections for contributed income moving forward actually is declining. Mm. And so we know that we are going to have to make up for that donor fatigue or the, you know, that projection of declining contributed revenues combined with continual declines in earned revenue. And where's that going to come from? I think that's going to come from state, municipal, and federal funding.
There is a program, I believe it's run by ArtsWA, the state organization, and it's about creative districts, creating or building creative districts within communities that, when they do so, get some funding from the state. Are you aware of that program? And if so, what do you see as the value?
Yes. No, I think that programs like that are exactly, and my hat's off to ArtsWA because they do a fantastic job at supporting arts and culture throughout the entire state of Washington. And those are exactly the types of programs that we need to continue funding and to expand funding for. You know, ArtsWA for Culture, Office of Arts and Culture, and there are a number of different arts and culture, you know, supporting organizations at the, you know, at the municipal, county, and state level that need to be funded even better than they have been in the past in order to really make sure that we come out of this solid and protected against any future shock.
Speaking of future shock, how about you pull out your crystal ball and give us an idea of what you see as the future of arts and cultural endeavors in this region post-pandemic? I know that's a nasty question.
Right. Hopefully I can borrow your crystal ball on this one. But, you know, I think one of the other recommendations that we have that I think cannot be ignored and really kind of responds to the question that you're putting out there is the idea that we need to center equity in everything that we do. Mm. And when you ask me what the future of the sector, whether it's locally, whether it's regionally, whether it's nationally, it has to be focusing on accessibility and equity. And I say that because it's the right thing to do and that all people need to benefit and have access to the benefits of arts and culture that we know are well documented in, you know, previous research reports that we did, like the social impact study and others nationwide. But I also think it's very important for us to focus on the idea that there is no way for our industry to grow without incorporating new audiences and new participants. And the way that we are going to do that is by reducing barriers to participation, like funding, digital access, youth, disability services. There's a host of barriers that have been present that we need to continue to dismantle in order to bring new audiences in and really bolster the support for the organizations that we cherish within our communities.
You know that when we were discussing a little farther back in the conversation, the new ways that people consumed art, for instance, streaming and so forth, it made me think perhaps that would grow the audience for live performances, that it might have the chance of bringing in people who might not otherwise have consumed performing arts, live performing arts. And that says to me, if there's a growing audience out there, then maybe there will be a growth in new and independent, smaller, more accessible arts and cultural organizations. What do you think about that?
You know, I think that one of the things that we have constantly talked about within the sector long before the pandemic are the access points for new people into the arts. Mm-hmm. And that can be any discipline, but how do you get that first taste? And is it through school? Is it through a friend? Is it through your family? Is it, like, what is it? And I think that as we've really expanded the ways that our organizations are present and offering their programming, we've exponentially expanded the number of individuals that can have that first taste in a way that is comfortable, that is non-threatening, and that is educational for them. I think we've all heard before that, you know, especially some of our larger venues can be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that necessarily needs to be the case for a new audience. And the idea that they can be on their computers at home and witnessing, you know, the beauty of a performance and start to learn and feel comfortable about what the art form is and how to engage with it. Like you said, we are hoping, and we don't have any evidence for this yet, but we are hoping that that then does lead towards more participation in the in-theater event and more participation in the live event. So we are hoping that that is the case, Susan.
I'm hoping for that, too. We are almost out of time. Michael, I've been talking with Michael Greer. You're listening to Real Talk. Michael is the president and CEO of Arts Fund in Seattle, and his organization recently published a report of the impact of the pandemic on arts throughout the state of Washington. Michael, in the last 2 minutes that we have, what would you like people to take away from this conversation? What would you like people to know or think about?
Support the arts. Support the arts in any way that you can. And yes, people think that, you know, donating and purchasing tickets is a definite way to support the arts in your community if that is something that you can do. But something that we can all do is advocate. Talk to your local representatives. Let them know that you care about arts and culture in your community. And I think at even more, a more base level, talk with your friends, talk with your neighbors, talk with people that maybe are not. If you can identify how arts and culture has benefited you, your life, your family's life, tell other people about it. Because I think that that base level of noise, if you will, that just arts and culture is present and it is creating value for all of us and all of our communities, we need that to be louder. And so, obviously, if you can financially support your organizations, please, please do that. But if nothing else, just let it be known that arts and culture matter to you.
And maybe folks volunteer for your local arts organization's activities so they can keep their overhead down and pay the professionals well.
If you have that time and those resources in order to do that, that is another fantastic way to donate to your organizations.
Michael Greer, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here on Real Talk, and most of all for the work that you're doing to keep the arts alive and well in Washington and in our region. Thank you so much for being with me here on Real Talk.
Thank you very much, and thank you for amplifying our message. We really, really appreciate it, and thanks for all that you're doing.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you, dear listener. This is Real Talk here every couple of Tuesdays a month with a little bit of curiosity chasing truth. Thanks for being here.